Welcome to Side B of Episode 60 of the Strong Style Story Podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can still find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is still at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And with me still is Chris Damasceno. Chris, happy anniversary, man. Four fucking years of doing this show.
Happy anniversary. Just, yeah, we got here.
It was looking a little dicey for a while there.
It definitely was. We were a little bit on the verge there of just going, you know what? We did three and a half years of this. It was a good run. But then 2019 happens and just 2019. What a year.
It's been a year. And we've all, I mean, I know the count says it's 60 episodes, but I mean, when you take into account all the split episodes we've done, all the side A, side B episodes we've done, all the pod blasts that we've put up, and really Strong Style history too.
Yeah.
Which I wish we could get back to. I really wish we could get back to. And I know with Lawrence joining us back on Boom Goes the Dynamite, I think we may have an opportunity to do so. I really, really wish Steve Cash could come back with us, and I know his reasons, and they're not really for me to say, but yeah. You know, Steve, we miss you too, brother. We miss having you around.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where we've, in the process of doing this, have met so many people, have had our fair share of other co-hosts who have come in and contributed a lot to what we're doing, and just, we're really appreciative for the fact that we've had, however small of an audience, at least having, you know, people that could still connect with us, who will listen to the episodes and stuff like that. It's appreciated, especially considering that there's so many voices within this particular type of thing with podcasts that are just shouting into the ether accordingly, that you've got to find something that connects with at least a certain group of people. So it's pretty cool that we've found at least a tiny amount of that.
Yeah, I mean, a tiny amount. Being part of, you know, first initially Place to Be Nation, and then, you know, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I mean, we did what was it, 20-odd episodes on our own before we got mm-hmm. picked up, because, you know, on the...
Yeah,
on
about 22, 23 of them, I feel.
Yeah, on the back end. Yeah, on the back end of Strong Style Story at that, or History, excuse me. I mean, things have gone through some changes. I mean, our venues have gone through some changes. Hell, I moved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I missed a show.
Yeah, that was also something that happened this year.
Yeah, which I'm thankful for JP Thrice for filling in for that episode.
Yep, John Pingle, good man.
Yep. I had to miss an episode. That like never happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a solo episode to make up for it.
Yep, you did.
Yeah, don't forget we had a half episode. We had a half episode because I designated. So see, I mean, we've kind of fudged the numbers. 60 is a nice, good landmark number. I mean, that's like mm-hmm. you know, most Vertigo comic series, if they were really good, 60. Like Preacher ended at 60. You know, I mean, okay, Sandman, Hellblazer, and Fables all went beyond, but you get my drift. You know.
Yeah, we've hit a good threshold of different things here, and that's pretty cool to have gotten this far.
Yeah, and this isn't our speech to say that we're quitting anytime soon, because we're not. I mean, hell, I mean, we've somewhat transitioned more to doing Boom Goes the Dynamite because of,
Weekly content.
weekly content. And I don't think New Japan really, I mean, I know there are folk who do weekly, hell, sometimes daily, New Japan podcasts out there.
Definitely.
We just don't have it in it to do that. I mean, even when we do Boom Goes the Dynamite, and this is something I'm thinking some time to talk some shit that we can never say on Boom Goes the Dynamite, because Boom Goes the Dynamite, I'm trying to keep it to a strict format of an hour show or below. Because let's face it, we're recording it late at night. I got to get up early in the morning to go to work.
Yeah, it's one of those things like with having jobs early in the morning for both of us in particular, it becomes a situation where, yeah, we need to wrap this up as quickly as possible to go to bed and all that
Yeah, which
stuff.
is fine. You know, it's been a great exercise in I mean, some shows on this network will expand upon an hour TV. We're compressing 2 hours of TV. Oh, actually three if we count AEW Dark. We're compressing that into an hour review show, you know? And I think
Trying our
it's a
best at
really
it.
good exercise, I think. But
It's different from anything we've done up to this point, I will
yeah.
say that.
Well, I mean, I wanted to keep Strong Style History to an hour too, but I mean, sometimes we went over because we had to, like with the Onita show.
Yeah, and the Ogawa and Hashimoto episode, I believe, went
Did we
over
go over? Did we go
fast
over an
enough.
hour on that one?
I believe we did, yes.
I
Not
don't.
by
I don't
much, but
remember.
it
I
enough,
don't
yeah.
remember at this point, but. But yeah, you know, it was you know, it's all good fun and but yeah, officially 60 episodes. Realistically, we've probably done more like 85.
I'd say, yeah, around the 85 threshold sounds about right.
But you know, we've you know, we do special one-offs and pod blasts and things like that. But yeah, so here, 4 years, Chris, you and I bullshitting on Twitter.
Turned out into something quite special, didn't it?
Boy, has it kind of changed how we view wrestling, how we interact with people in wrestling, go to wrestling, you know? It's.
Yeah, I think specifically the going to wrestling part is the biggest effect of this podcast on me in particular.
Yeah. I mean, and we did it. It seems like we caught the wave just at the right time, you know,
Yeah, I agree with that.
because the wave was already hitting between, you know, still kind of the nascent, ROH and New Japan, interactions, and then, you know, Access picking up New Japan.
Yeah. We got, I think, at the boat where business was already booming since the post Tanahashi days, but where we were still in that, oh, there's another peak that they can reach at this point, which they have, so.
So yeah, maybe we should let's transition to actually talking about that. One of the biggest stories of the year, of course, was the formation of New Japan Pro Wrestling of America.
Yeah, and that got dropped on us considerably at somewhat of an odd time too. It was just shortly after they had acquired Stardom as well in the process, which was another big get under the Bushiroad corporate banner there.
Yeah, that was something. I mean, and we've there's already been ripples from this. Because I think we could say for sure that the Madison Square Garden show, which of course both of us were present at, that was definitely a watershed moment, but maybe not in the way we initially thought it would be.
Yeah,
Because,
initially.
and this is something I wanted to ask you. Do you think now, with hindsight, as a New Japan show, was the Madison Square Garden show a letdown? And the reason why I ask that is because when you talk about the MSG show, what is the main thing that people focus on about that show?
Yeah, it was basically of how the Ring of Honor affiliate side kind of shit the bed considerably in terms of what they presented and just the baffling decisions that they made in the process of that show. and how it sort of overshadowed some really, really good matches that the New Japan talent had, and that even Ring of Honor interacting with New Japan talent had. We can't forget about Jeff Cobb being a part of that, and part of a really good opener with Will
Well,
Ospreay
that match was
for,
fantastic. I love that match.
Bandido, Ishimori, Dragon Lee triple threat as well, which
Same.
really got the crowd back after a considerably bad angle that had happened prior to it.
Yeah, I mean.
Only to for it to be for the crowd to be killed again after the tag match that involved various talents there. So it's
Or lack of talents, if Enzo and Cass.
yeah, it's just I think the biggest problem with it is that at the end of the day, that Garden Show is remembered that as, hey, New Japan had some really good matches there. It's just too bad that Ring of Honor just kind of really crapped the bucket there
I mean,
in time. It's
there
a
was
very
some really
mixed
good.
reaction show.
There wasn't just some really good matches. There was an historic event, an IWGP heavyweight title change on American soil happened on that
Yes.
show.
Which, again, talk about things we did not expect to see happen at any point.
And it gets overshadowed by Enzo, Cass, the beautiful people, Kenny King ruining a Liger versus Muta moment at MSG, which how the fuck do you do that? Especially since we it was known by then that Liger was retiring.
Just, and I mean, if you think about it, not only just from the perspective of the show being disappointed, but everything that has happened to Ring of Honor since that. If we thought like that was the worst of it, at the time we thought that was the worst of it, and that we'd end up seeing the partnership definitely lean even more towards the New Japan side. But boy, never did we expect anything like the way that that road went down over the course of
Yeah,
this year.
well, I mean, you could draw a straight line from that to Kelly Klein and Joey Mercury, you know? You draw
Yeah,
a
definitely.
straight line from that show. I mean, even to the point where it's, I mean, people were ha-ha joking about it, but people were legitimately thinking that a certain former Dudley boy was. Who works for Ring of Honor now was sabotaging the Fighting Spirit Unleashed show at New York.
Yeah, it's
You know?
crazy.
I mean, I don't know if that w actually was the case, but something definitely got fucked up there. But you know, the point is that I was trying to get to with that, it was like in that respect, the MSG show was great. We had great fun for the most part, although, you know, again, Ring of Honor's title ladder match, I did laps around MSG because I had absolutely no interest in that match whatsoever.
We've expressed our distaste for that particular match
Yeah, but I mean,
in past episodes here, so
but I
I
mean,
won't reiterate
like
on
I
it
said,
again, but
the point is that people are remembering G1 Supercard, which had him some historic moments for New Japan. Happened on it. There people are more remembering it for this being the clear, you know, turning point moment for Ring of Honor in 2019, and I think that's a shame because I mean that's why I say in that respect that show was a disappointment. It with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, that's a fair enough thing to say at this point, just hindsight being 2020, so
Yeah, but I mean, let's face it. That has, I mean, but that show particular, I think, again, you could draw a straight line from that show to the formation of New Japan Pro Wrestling of America too.
yeah, because even going to that, even for the Fighting Spirit Unleashed tour, even with the screw up that happened in the New York side of the fence, that was New Japan running three buildings that Ring of Honor has been infamous for running over the last decade and being able to sell them out, if not coming close to it. So
Yeah.
it shows you right there that for a certain size of venues, that there is that interest to fill them out for New Japan shows, and that is not a good sign for Ring of Honor by any means, especially now with this announcement that New Japan of America is going forward as its foothold in the United States for the company.
Well, let's face it. I mean, if we can still persevere on this topic for a minute too, you know, AEW, the formation of AEW was a death knell of Ring of Honor too, because honestly, Ring of Honor could have had live weekly TV at any point because they're only owned by one of the biggest media conglomerates in the entire goddamn world.
Yep, who treats them like a forgotten toy in the attic at that, and gives them the budget of one on top of it too.
Yeah,
So,
so I mean, yeah, I mean
which again, makes it hilarious that dipshits like Silas Young are out there basically saying, "Oh, if you put us on TV every week, we won't botch basic stuff." Like, shut the fuck up,
yeah, Jesus
please.
Christ, you botched your biggest show of all time. Yeah, shut the fuck up. Exactly.
Just, duh, like
Yeah, well,
I.
yeah. As I recall, the match he was involved with stunk up the joint. It was only remembered because Flip Gordon decided to, pull a Tommy Dreamer moment, which is oddly fitting because the Tommy Dreamer moment in question was the thing that got Tommy Dreamer over because he wasn't particularly liked or talented, but showed he could take an ass whooping by getting, caned 10 times by the Sandman. You
Yeah,
know?
so it's one of the situations where, again, don't throw stones into glass houses
Yeah,
type of
Jesus
thing. Just,
Christ. Jesus Christ.
know,
Okay, anyway, enough about Ring of Honor. The point is that New Japan has now taken this initiative to be their own entity in this country, and it's definitely changing the way that they're working with their partners now.
Yeah, definitely so.
Because now
Because.
New Japan seems to be more picking and choosing who from Ring of Honor comes over, and I have not seen Honor Rising on the shows list yet.
No, I don't think it's. Apparently, it doesn't seem like it's happening this year. It seems like New Japan is running on their own around that timetable while Ring of Honor's running their own things too.
Yeah,
I
there's
think
not.
they had this. But I don't think Honor Rising's happening this
Yeah,
year.
which I mean, are we gonna miss it?
Not
Well,
exactly.
what is the only thing that Honor Rising has really ever produced was a meme of Tamaki Hanma screaming like he was dying because Bushi missed at him, you know?
Yeah. Or I mean, to be fair, it's given us certain talents like, Jeff Cobb's ability to show out a little bit more and things of that sort.
That's
So
true.
small little moments. But beyond that, I don't think it's been anything overly special of any kind has happened during those shows.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so but I mean, now it's even maybe affecting their relationship with CMLL too.
Yeah, and I
Because
mean.
I mean, Fantastica Mania is on the books, but as we discussed with Cubs fan earlier this year, I mean, they went behind CMLL's back to get to sign Ryo Lee now.
And that's the thing, like for them specifically, Dragon Lee, now Ryu Lee, was someone that was in their long-term plans, I feel, with having the junior heavyweight title run that he's had from the Madison Square Garden show until Dominion happened this year around. So it's a situation where, regardless of whatever CMLL would try to do to him, as it turns out, Dragon Lee working Battle of Los Angeles on the same weekend as a couple of AAA talents were working that show as well, didn't sit well with the politics of Mexico, but Japan just doesn't give a crap at this point about their politics.
Yeah, I
It's
think it
that
was
power
re
shift once again.
right, but and also too, don't forget that the Liger show, really was not the Liger retirement show at Arena Mexico really had nothing to do with New Japan,
No, it
and
was just Liger
because
getting his own booking.
yeah, Liger could make his own booking, so I
And
mean.
yes, that is something that, for those who might not be in the know, that is something that Jushin Thunder Liger has been able to do over the course of the years. It's how he's worked Battle of Los Angeles back in 2016. It's how he's even worked the WWE NXT TakeOver show in Brooklyn a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
So,
well, while New Japan talents were working a Ring of Honor show, like across
yeah.
town, yeah, Liger was working WWE. So, I mean, it's, you know, so basically, I mean, it's clear that New Japan have more leverage now. I mean, they definitely have the leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ring of Honor is on the decline, and in fact, I doubt they make to Final Battle 2020 at this point. I have severe doubts about this. At the same time, you know, CMLL has always operated. I mean, they CMLL traditionally takes the isolationism of themselves to a point where it would look like Giant Baba in the 90s was open borders.
Yeah, definitely so.
You know, the way that he ran All Japan after the mm-hmm. after the SWS exodus, you know.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where they'll be, CMLL will be fine. They're still doing really good business at Arena Mexico every weekend. So,
like, if not quality, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, regardless of the circumstances, they're still gonna be fine on their home turf. But from a relationship standpoint, yeah, the New Japan side of the fence definitely has more things stacked up on their end compared to what their partners do. So,
I mean, that I think has been one of the major undercurrents of the year. Now, we could talk about the traditional wrestling things. Hey, who was your favorite wrestler of 2019? And of course, the answer to that, there's only one answer is Shingo Takagi. I will say this, very close second. Who's your second place?
I would honestly have to say, thinking about it, Kota Ibushi honestly deserves a nod in that.
Okay.
I think he's been solid throughout the year.
My very close second to Shingo. And of course, a lot of this, it may be somewhat outside of New Japan too, would be Moxley.
That's fair, yeah.
Because, let's face it, he added an element of excitement and danger into the G1 climax that maybe was not there before, you know?
Yeah, definitely so. And again,
his interactions with Shota Umino were just masterful.
The stuff with Shota Umino, the masterclass of a comedy match that was John Moxley versus Toru Yano is something that needs to be seen to be believed.
I mean, how this is something we ask almost weekly on Boom Goes the Dynamite. We're going to ask it here. How the fuck did Vince McMahon just not strap the rocket to this man?
Well, I think we'd be here a while trying to answer that, to be honest. So let's just
since he has left WWE, he can do no wrong.
Yeah, I think a lot of it specifically is just him knowing himself, knowing what he can do, knowing what he wants to do, and then just going out there and doing it, and it works, and people like it. And
I know, but I mean, let's face it. Let's face it. The post match at Dominion with him basically kidnapping Shota was just, holy shit, what is this?
You know? Yeah, we definitely weren't expecting that, and then we kind of just, and I think in a way too, kind of garnered for some of the newer audience in New Japan, it kind of garnered an interest in what Shota Umino's doing at this point going forward as well.
I mean, he is over as hell as Shooter in RevPro right now.
Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, we're going to see where things goes. Like I think we mentioned it in the past episode, but Shota with his gear during Excursion, now he has baby Tanahashi vibes with the color scheme, the way the gear itself looks, and just
that's another thing about the partnerships too, is that you notice how Shota went to RevPro, whereas Red Narita is part of the LA
Dojo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, neither of them went to Mexico.
Nope. Yeah, very much so. And again, Let's also take the time to cover that, even though RevPro doesn't get talked about as often, talk about like an actual partner for New Japan that they do consider to be equals to a certain extent, and the fact that they ran an actual full key event for the company at why is the name expect the copper box this year around
yeah,
in London this year?
Yeah, and yeah, the copper box, yes. That
and they had
Hackney, yes.
Yeah, and they had some major title changes happening during that as well too, with, you know, Kenta winning another title and as well as Tanahashi winning the British heavyweight title, undisputed heavyweight title there from Zach, which
nice.
Yeah, it's just very, very interesting.
Yeah, so I think we definitely are going to see the changes here. Overall, 2019 New Japan gets a thumbs up from me. Obviously, there's been some questionable decisions, and we've talked about them, and I blog about them, and you know, I'm just saying overall.
Yeah, we have gone for it, but when you consider how 2019 was going towards the tail end of it,
2018.
To go into this, yeah, 2018, and to go into what they did this year around, yeah, I definitely believe they deserve the thumbs up for it and then some, because not only just from our perspective as fans, but I mean, if you look at it from the business side with attendance numbers, ticket sales and stuff, that's all been up from last year in the majority of their events compared to the year before. So
yeah, we were hating life towards around this time last year. We were hating life with New Japan. We were just like, oh my God, we couldn't wait for the AEW rumors to come true.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, New Japan had just become the elite show and it was awful. The booking was all, you know, it was just awful.
Now, there were just a lot of concessions being done for guys that weren't going to be there for the long haul at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at this point,
said, so yeah.
I mean, I hate to mention this, Chris, but the last two King of Pro Wrestling main events have not been great.
Yeah.
I don't care what Tokyo Sports has to say about it.
Yeah. Again, out of the Okada Sonata matches, that one from King of Pro Wrestling was my least favorite of the four. And that's unfortunate considering that was sort of like the payoff to all of them, but yeah. I just don't think it clicked the way the others did. Yeah. So, unfortunate, but hey.
Okay, so we submitted our New Japan Wrestler of the Year already. I mean, there was no, we talked about this for months that, yeah, Shingo was the guy. Who do you think was not as appreciated as he should have been?
I'd say that's a little bit tougher, because a part of me wants to say Lance Archer, but at the same time, Lance Archer's whole renaissance really began during the middle of the year, and we really started paying attention to him at that point. So it's almost like it's a situation where you could call, I guess some people can argue that you might have been unappreciated throughout the entirety of the year, but at the same time, he's definitely been noticeable, especially now as the IWGP US Heavyweight Champion. I'd say Juice might have a strong case for it in the fact that he's been around, he's had good matches throughout the year, but just kind of, again, the stop-and-go portions of his booking really keeping him from, I think, being as appreciated as he probably should be.
Okay. My answer is going to shock you.
Go ahead.
Knowing my traditional opinions of this guy.
Okay.
Taichi.
Okay, yeah, that's a strong one, too. I would say he would be probably the close second in my book, just on the fence of...
Talk about it, difference-wise. Yeah, I still don't like him necessarily, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
He has shown out himself as somebody... I mean, he can work matches, and I still think that his... You know, everybody was praising the Taichi versus Ishii New Japan Cup match. I still think that he actually
his
had
match
a
with Honma was the better one. Right?
I still legitimately think that his match with Honma was a better one. But
I think both of those matches I think were a key turning point for a lot of people on the Taichi side of the wagon. So
right, and I mean he got past the Iron Finger from Hell from when Takashi Iizuka retired, something we barely touched on, you know. And Yeah, which I'm kind of grateful for the year in review videos, because I mean it reminded me of some things I almost completely forgot. I actually conflated Iizuka's and Junji Hirata's retirement. So I actually thought that Iizuka had retired last year.
Because
So
that
much,
his
so
and
much.
Strong Machine's retirements happened this year. Yep. It's
No.
not.
Super Strong Machine was last year.
Oh, no, last year. My bad. Yep.
I
See?
conflated the two. So yeah. But I mean, I think that's what I said. I think it's criminal that Taiichi doesn't have something more substantial going on at Wrestle Kingdom. I
Yeah,
thought
although I
he
do.
had a breakout year as a
Yeah,
singles.
definitely so. But I do think that by doing this to him this year, where he's sort of just in the mix, in the tag portion for night one, and then being involved with the Never Six Man belts, where I do think that the big stuff for him is going to be coming January 6. Because I do think strongly at this point that if the rumors of Minoru Suzuki leaving the company after January 6 are true, I do think it is going to be Taiichi who betrays him, the same way that Suzuki betrayed Kojima all those years ago and basically takes over the stable himself. It becomes Taiichi-gun,
Yeah.
which talk about one major way of going into 2020 at that point.
Yeah,
So.
I think if that's going to happen, I think that is what's going to happen if it happens. So, shit, I had it on the tip of my brain. A match that not enough people talk about.
Okay.
No, I'm
Tell
asking you.
us.
I'm asking you.
Oh, a match. Oh, okay. That was the question to me in
Yeah,
particular.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think this is something that will get mentioned in a couple of years once he's back from excursion, but I don't think we've really mentioned like the key importance of Shota Umino versus Jon Moxley was. I know we mentioned all the backstage antics and everything that's happened in the aftermath, but that match itself, even though it was a quick, like 2 to 3 minute squash, let's remember the beginning of it with Shota Umino literally diving right onto Jon Moxley as he was making his entrance, not waiting a
Yes.
second to get at him. And I mean, we've seen this Shota before in matches like the highly acclaimed match that we both kept talking about that people had forgotten about last year between him and Daisuke Sekimoto at a Lions Break show.
Oh,
So
yeah.
that it's Shota has had a lot of these performances that in his earlier portion of his career. Hell, you can even talk about him and Tanahashi at the New Japan Cup at
Yep.
that as being another that.
How about his match with Shingo?
Yeah, that singles one as well too. It just
Although
Shota
I
Umino
think that might
singles.
have been last year, actually, but
No, I think you're right. Yeah, but I do think that him and Tana and him and Moxley this year are matches that we didn't pay as much attention to just because he's still in that young lion's status. But that in about 2 years or so, once he's back from excursion and really like tearing things up, we're gonna look back at those and go, wow, all of the elements for him were right there and then. It was just time, basically, was all we needed.
yeah, I
So.
think yeah, I mean. And let's face it, we all know why Shota was getting some opportunities that perhaps other young lions were not ever going to.
Yeah.
We all know why. He has family connections, but let's face it, he came good on those too, is the thing.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like, you can talk about, oh, nepotism is what got him here, but here's the thing. At the end of the day, when that bell rings, nepotism isn't gonna make you wrestle better.
No,
So.
and if you recall, yeah, as you mentioned, you say that people forgot about Shota versus Daisuke Sekimoto. That was my New Japan of the match of the year last year.
Yes, and you mentioned as much when the year in review portion last year around as well. So.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna go mention Moxley again. But honestly, I don't actually think that his match with Ishii during G1 Climax. I think it's kind of gotten forgotten a little
You're right.
bit.
No, I do agree with that just because Moxley did have some really good performances in the G1 overall. The stuff with Juice, him and Naito was fantastic. Him and Yano was probably the comedy match of the year outright. But then, yeah, as you mentioned, like him versus Ishii and that brawl that they had that was just off the charts. It was everything like that you were hoping for in a match like that between those two and beyond at that. So.
I'm telling you, had it not been for Shingo tearing it up in Best of Super Juniors and in G1, had it not been for that, Moxley might have been my New Japan and overall wrestler of the year. Because I mean, remember the look at what he look at that promo he inspired with Juice after Juice lost to him that first time. That was like the most fire babyface Juice promo I've ever heard. And he was talking about how he lost and it was a fire promo, you know? How he got his ass thoroughly handed to him. It was a great
Just one of
promo. I mean, Moxley just made everything. He made everything around him in New Japan better.
It's maximizing your minutes is what it comes down to. And I think that it had it not been for Shingo Takagi doing that from the start of the year at the position that he was in, yeah, it's a situation where Moxley maximizes minutes in New Japan and made it memorable in his own way, in terms of how he's interacted with G1, to where it's almost kind of sad in a way that he's fully contracted to AEW and not New Japan Pro Wrestling, because I do think that there is something special about him to kind of explore within the realms of the New Japan side of the fence. But
I agree, but I mean we'll see. I mean
yeah, we'll wait and see what happens, definitely.
Let's just say that there's a higher likelihood of New Japan still being around here next year than maybe AEW, which is not to say that AEW is going to be going down, but I'm just saying the likelihood that New Japan's still going to be around probably a little higher.
Little there. Yeah, fair. But I
Oh,
mean,
okay.
for you specifically, what was the answer for you on that one
That
in
was
terms
the
of just
answer. It was
Moxley? Okay, yeah,
Moxley
got
and
it.
Ishii. Biggest disappointment of 2019 overall.
I think if you're going from like a canonical like wins and losses perspective, it almost has to be Will Ospreay. Just on the fact that, considering the amount of open weight opportunity, no, just follow me on this one. Like, considering the amount of opportunities with New Japan Cup, G1, Best of the Super Juniors, which, for him in particular, that was one that he did slam dunked on, so good for him. But I mean, considering the amount of tournaments that he's been in and the amount of like key singles matches that he's been in and sort of not being on the winning end of a majority of those, it could be argued that he might be a disappointment from a canonical standpoint. Now, from a match standpoint, I'm not going to say it's him by any means on that. I can at least give him that much of a do.
I was thinking that his continued existence was a disappointment to you.
I mean, you went there, not me, for once.
You're the one who
But
caught the block from him, so.
well, this is true. Yeah, that is a thing that did happen. I'm just trying to think in general, because can we say possibly Goto again this year? Because, woof.
Well, that would have to imply that Goto actually had any forward momentum going to begin with. I mean, let's face it. I think Goto's in his niche now, and that's just kind of where he's gonna be. My answer, the biggest disappointment for me personally, was no Young Lion. Excuse me, Lionsgate shows, because I love the Lionsgate shows.
Oh, you mean in general? Okay, that
Well,
explains it. I thought we were talking
I
just
mean.
wrestlers, so.
Well, no. That's, I mean, no. That, no. You were perfectly within the realm of what I was asking, but my personal, just for me personally, was just the lack of Lionsgate shows because, and I understand because really they only had two real viable young lions for a lot of it,
Yeah,
but I mean,
unfortunately,
but
for
we
the
still had Red
history.
Narita and Shota Umino there for most of it. But I mean, they could have. I mean, Yoda and Yuya could have done something else, and they could have brought in some more indie guys.
Yeah, it's true. I do think that the concept itself has a good aspect to it, and I would like to see more of it as well. But I can understand why this year they maybe decided to step back from it and just focus it on maybe some more of the foreigner shows in general. Though I guess, actually, I do have one from an overall perspective, not just like a wrestler being a disappointment. I'd say probably the biggest disappointment of the year would probably have to be the New Beginning shows in the US with the circumstances that were unfortunately like out of their hand, but it definitely shifted a lot of those cards into stuff that not a lot of people wanted to see, unfortunately, and kind of left a really bad taste on people's mouths regarding New Japan and their westward expansion stuff.
Okay,
So.
I can buy that. If we're going to talk about wrestlers and disappointments, Jesus Christ, what the fuck is the point of Mikey Nichols?
That was definitely more of a lower card signing than anything else, but talk
That
about people
was
floundered, unfortunately.
Okay, so he's mad Mikey Nichols, but he's not actually that mad, and he's in Chaos, but he never actually teams with any other Chaos member. What the fuck was this?
It felt like they wanted to try to do something with him, and then after the first month, they're just like, we need more of a fall guy than anything else for the Chaos guys that isn't Yoshihashi every once in a blue moon. So, Mikey, that's going to be you for like the rest of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that was a bad signing. It was just completely pointless. Speaking of pointless, is there any point to the division between the Sekigoin and Chaos at this point? Because they spent most of the year and part of the end of last year, you know.
Yeah, in bed with one another. I get that. Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, is this a trend that's going to continue still, or are we going to see the two sides finally be separated because of some major event? Because I would like to see the, there being a differential between them again. Just not that some of these tags that they've had between the two joint forces have been bad in any way, shape, or form, but I do think that there is a certain shelf life to it, and they're getting close to, if not
Well,
past that at this point.
and I also think that there was still it was still really disingenuous and ignoring a lot of continuity involved. Because are you really going to tell me that Satoshi Kojima and the likes of Kojima and Togi Makabe and Yuji Nagata are going to be happy teaming with Chaos guys? I mean, do we forget the whole story of Chaos?
And that's the thing. I figure, like, from a perspective, they can explain that a majority of the major Chaos guys, like Nakamura and stuff, not being there anymore, who caused a lot of that. But at the same time, it's still
Well,
it's
Toriano's
the
still there.
yeah, exactly. It's the pers it's that perspective of we remember what happened a couple of years ago. This is still bullshit kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it just amazed me that they could have had it. They had a chance to actually maybe do something different and maybe reconfigure some things. Like I can understand, I can understand Tanahashi and Okada joining forces. I can kind of understand that because after they've been through the wars, what else, what left do you have, you know?
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And then, and that's something that we forgot of. That's something that's gotten buried under this. Okada finally, we finally had a winner in G1 Climax between Okada and Tanahashi.
Yeah.
After four attempts, we finally had a winner between the two. You know?
Goodness, yeah, it's
But
nuts to think about it, but yeah, that was a thing to happen.
I really think that they had an opportunity here, and I thought that they had this opportunity with the Bullet Club too, with regard to the Elite and all that, and then they just ended up, oh well, they ended it with a promo on a boat.
Yeah, which, and let me put it this way too. I will give credit to kind of the work that Jay White and the rest of the guys that have been in Bullet Club since over the past year have done to sort of not fully rehabilitate, but at the very least make it so that a lot of the stench from last year's Bullet Club quote unquote wars, that there is some dissertation now that there is Bullet Club being Bullet Club and doing Bullet Club antics, which can be tiring shenanigans at times, but at the very least they're consistent about it now, and they have somebody leading them that is a detestable piece of crap,
Yeah.
which
I mean, Jay White has built himself as like possibly the biggest heel in wrestling because he's a guy who does heel shtick and gets booed for it, which is what you're supposed to,
everywhere at that, just
I mean,
and that takes work.
Dion
that
Wells.
Takes work.
I mean, Dion was cheering for Jay at MSG, but I mean, because I mean, I know that because he was sitting right next to me. But boy, that arena, Madison Square Garden, fucking.
Oh yeah,
collectively fucking hated.
Yeah, it was just an outright pouring of yo, fuck this guy, man.
Yeah, so I mean, I really think that I think that's something in 2020 that they really need to start thinking about, maybe reconfiguring some of the units that are getting along in the tooth. I mean, my God, Los Ingobernables are going to be 5 years old in New Japan come October, you know?
Which,
well, actually,
again,
wait, I take it back, August, my bad.
Yeah, but it's still one of the situations where it is nuts to think about some of these stables, how long they've been around and stuff like that. And this is something that we even touched on last year as well, that we would like to see a bit of reconfiguration. And
we've been saying this.
We haven't got.
Oh God, we've been saying this for all 4 years.
Yeah, for sure. Whether this is the year where that finally happens or not, we don't know yet. We're just gonna have to wait and see, like everybody else. But
yeah. Let's see. Who do you think maybe is poised to have a breakout year next year?
There's a couple of people who can do it, who can probably do a little bit of that. And we know Shingo now is officially a heavyweight, has moved on to that. So I do think that 2020 could be the year where he starts on that path to getting his first major singles championship with the company. I do think that he is bound for something like that at some point here. If Ospreay does lose the junior heavyweight title, I do think that by New Japan Cup next year, he is going to be officially on the heavyweight division and lets Robbie Eagles kind of take the mantle as the singles junior heavyweight guy, and he could possibly be geared for a run himself somewhere down the line in 2020 as well, as he is very talented, and he works kind of a different style compared to a couple of the other juniors in the company, so it should be really interesting to see him going a little bit more into that and finding his own identity as a singles guy rather than just being like the chaos guy who teams up with the other chaos guys at this juncture kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
The Robbie Eagles could be another one for sure. Taichi probably might be the best shot I think we would see at a guy that literally breaks out next year, especially if he takes over the Suzuki-gun portion, if Minoru Suzuki is to go away as rumors have mentioned him leaving and stuff.
Yeah,
so
it's all very provisional at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any questions for me?
I would say in particular, who is one guy that you would rather at this point that you think has been pushed considerably over the last year or so that you just wanted to stop completely? Like, please get off this train. I want out.
You know, if you would have asked me this 6 months ago, I would have said Taichi, but honestly, he's kind of wormed his way into
most people's hearts at this point, it feels like.
I wouldn't say my heart, but I mean, at least, you know, he doesn't irritate me like he was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Who should be de-pushed? Oh, Jesus. You know, I'm ready for Okada to not be the focal point of the promotion for a while.
And again, I think that might... I could see some people being on that boat just to, like, ease off the pedal a little bit with Okada, but then I remember, oh, yeah, he's doing the torch thing for the Olympics.
Well,
and
yeah,
stuff
he
too.
Is. I mean, he's not going to be – he's never going to entirely go away. I'm not saying he – I'm just saying maybe don't make him be the champion for a while. You know,
that's a good while,
you know?
That's a fair assessment to make, yeah.
I mean, yes, there was a nine-month gap in between his title, you know, the end of, you know, his reign that ended with Kenny Omega and then, you know,
getting
started
back
with Jay
at the Garden. Yeah.
At the Garden, sure. There was a 9 month gap there, but that was after like a basically 3 year straight run with bar 70 days of Naito in the middle of that. Anyone else that needs to be Honestly, well, I mean, Will Ospreay's just an irritant, but I mean, he's good, so he I mean, he does earn his spot. He's just an irritant, you know, in real life. Yeah, I think again, I think maybe Okada needs maybe not be a one of the primary focal points of the promotion so much in the championship picture. You know, I think maybe they need to somehow find something for Okada to do that doesn't involve the title in some way, shape, or form. You know, like when, you know, that the whole Balloon Boy thing, which was it was fun for a while, but like that was part of the reason why 2018 was getting on me too, was the whole Balloon Boy thing. You know, it was, yeah, I mean, yeah, let's. Yeah, let's ease back on Okada for a little bit. Let's let whoever becomes the double champion become the focal point for a good while, you know?
Take the spotlight for a while. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. All right, next up, if you have anything.
Not specifically that comes in particular, but I think we can tackle at the very least one question that we did get from specifically from one of my close personal friends who
Well,
has
hang on.
bonded
Well,
us. Oh, are we doing those at the end? Okay, sure.
hang on a minute. Yeah, we actually. Well, I mean, I'm done with any questions I had for you. I'm just gonna say that we actually threw this out to Twitter for a little bit, and we didn't get as many as we would have liked. So, hey, thanks, guys. But we did
We
get
did get some
some.
interesting ones
We
at
did
the
get
very
some
least,
interesting
so.
ones. So, yeah, I'm ready to take those. So, yeah, why don't you go ahead with the ones that you've received?
Yeah, sure. So this one's from my friend Jordan, who doesn't have any social media at all, so I can't really plug his stuff on here. But he did come at us with something interesting in the fact that he asked, his specific question is, do you feel as though New Japan's Western expansion has hurt the wrestling industry overall? And his subtext for the question is that fans now do seem to have a historically unrealistic high bar of what in-ring quality should look like due to being able to binge watch, Tokyo Dome main events, and that talent is starting to kind of work that style right out of the gate as well. Just about really in a lot of different companies, even WWE has been seeing a lot of that with some of their recent acquiries as well
Acquisitions.
too. Acquisitions, thank you. My English is bad, y'all. It's my second language for a very good reason.
Okay. What? You know what? I'm interested in hearing your answer before I get mine.
But to me, just having thought about it over the course of the night, I think it has had an effect in terms of the in-ring product having a certain expectation from fans at this point to where they want to see good matches, but they also want to see all of the other stuff with the portions of, your storytelling, your consistent threads of, going from point A to point B without, getting diverted in different directions. Whether that bar is unrealistic or not, I think it depends on what you're watching and what you're expecting out of that product. Because at the end of the day, if you're watching a product like New Japan Pro Wrestling compared to a WWE product or AEW or even some of the smaller companies, like you say, your GCWs and PWGs and stuff like that, I think each company has a certain, I think fans of different companies have certain expectations for what they think that company's style of matchup is. But I do think that New Japan's style, and I think even before the Western expansion, has had some effect in terms of what we view to be a good match. And that there are certain people working that specific style. Yes, I think we do see that more often than not these days. But I do think that certain people have the wrong idea of what that should look like and what that actually is.
Okay, the answer to my answer to that question is I don't think it's because of New Japan's Western expansion, because I think this has been building for decades. And I think you could trace this going to the tape trade era, because where a lot of that actually I think the roots of this is not necessarily New Japan, because let's not forget New Japan. They were the ones who were doing, you know, 17-minute IWGP title matches. They were the ones during that, during Inoki. I think Ehashi has more to do. Oh, shit. Sorry, I dropped my mic there. I think it actually has more to do with the influence of the King's Road era of All Japan.
Yeah, no, I would say that Kings Road era definitely is essential to not only having that era, but then having Noah as well in the early 2000s
That's
being
yes.
predominantly that as well.
Right, because and it because these were the tapes. I mean, and yes, New Japan was going around, but the thing that people were saying in the 90s during the tape trading days was that people were focusing on the juniors in New Japan. The
Fair.
heavyweight style, which had a
That
lot more
was all just.
influence, that was all Japan. And I think that's where you get all these 30, 40-minute, mat classics. The Misawa and Kawadas,
Yeah, and the hard and the really hard hitting, drop you on your heads cut type suplexes and the like. Yeah, that was a King's Road influence for sure.
Because you could see the buildup, because this is basically, these are the, because the wrestlers that were watching New Japan Juniors and All Japan Heavyweights, they were the ones who were doing the Super 8, which led directly into the formation of Ring of Honor.
Yeah, there's the Ring
And
of Honor portion of things, and I would also say too, if you're looking at kind of your modern style as well, I would even argue that something like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla has influenced a lot of that too, in
yeah.
terms of.
So I don't think it's New Japan that's doing this. I think New Japan, I think the profligacy of the internet has helped New Japan break into America in such a way that, I mean, we're coming up on 5 years of them being on Access, even though they've been off for the most of the month of December. Oh shit, you know what? That's something we haven't even talked about.
Yeah,
Well,
the.
the purchase of Access by
Yeah,
Anthem.
by. Yep.
I mean, that was something major that happened this year too.
And not to mention the fact that Impact has officially been inserted into their lineup of shows too,
Yeah,
and that seems to be taking
although on a
precedence.
Tuesday rather than the Saturday, which is where they put, New Japan and WOW.
Yeah.
But
So.
I mean, I think that's going to be in effect, I think, long term.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, I don't think it was New Japan specifically that was doing this. I think maybe because they're maybe the more public, marketable, known currently pushers of maybe that style. But let's face it, this has been building on the indies for since the turn of the millennium.
As you mentioned, it might be the most well-displayed portion at this point, but it's not the sole thing responsible for
No,
it, by any
this
means.
has been building for ages. But that was a very good question, though. Thanks for that. You said we had another one.
We had another one, which was from my friend Kevin, who was with me for Battle of Los Angeles this year around. It was his first round going to that. And this one's more specific to two particular guys. The first part of it being, hey, do you think that Hiromu Takahashi will ever move up to the heavyweight division? Which I think we both probably think yes, but not immediately.
Well, I know that Hiromu has said in interviews in the past that he wants to be the junior that can take on the heavyweights because he was specifically citing Prince Devitt.
Yes, That was something that was mentioned in the interviews in the past. Whether
Given
that move
yeah,
happens, it's a little bit weird.
given what happened with Kushida, which that's something else we can put on the disappointments list.
Yeah.
Was the, how yeah the manner in which Kushida left the company.
Which was just very, hey, let's give you one good match against Hiromu Tanahashi for your last one before you go to America and stuff. And it's a fantastic match, and it makes you just think, what if?
Yeah, I mean
What if, man?
the way that they sat on Kushida when he was so poised to break out, I think he could have gone up and delivered good matches against, some of the heavyweights.
He was the ideal open weight champion, to be honest, for us for a long
Yeah,
time.
the way that they sat on that, I don't know. I don't think they're going to, at least not anytime soon. I mean, especially with, coming back from injury,
Yeah, I think
he now has to rebuild his case.
Yes, I do think that the neck injury puts like another year or two on that timetable for him to be openly fighting heavyweights on equal footing. But I do think that it can happen somewhere down the line. I just don't think it will be as immediate of a case as we would have thought, say, at the beginning of last year when he was still running at full gear. Now, for the second part of that question, it was whether Tomohiro Ishii will ever get a run with either the IC or the heavyweight title.
You go ahead.
The IC, I could see it sometime in late 2020. Not the heavyweight, though. He's at this point where he is already in his mid-40s, and just I don't think he gets even kind of like your Manabu Nakanishi thank you run for that, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think Goto is gonna have a get a sympathy run before Ishii would, but yeah, no, that was exactly my answer too. So, I at this point, Ishii's not gonna get the heavyweight title. It's not gonna happen.
It's unfortunate, but
There's a few people I don't think are ever gonna get the heavyweight title. He's one of them. Sonata will not. And remember that the two of the major things between them is that the fact that they weren't dojo guys.
Yeah, that's fair. Ishii was one of the four Black Saints at that, so there's that portion to consider there. And sometimes, man, not everybody can be the top guy, unfortunately, when it comes to professional wrestling. So,
Yeah, that much is true. That much is true. So, we actually have one last question here. Actually, well,
yep.
actually, he really stacked this. This is from the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network's own Stagger Lee Malone of the Days of Thunder podcast, which we've both become very vocal fans of. Even though that I do like to give Lee a right bollocking for mispronouncing beer names. But the fact of the matter is he actually wrote some very, very good questions here, so we're gonna go through those. I'm gonna read these off. The first part of the, actually he wrote three kind of. With Tetsuya Naito, the favorite to leave Wrestle Kingdom weekend as double champion, which title do you see him losing first and who defeats him? Chris, do you want to take this one first?
Yes, sure. I will say if he does hold on to both titles and they have him do kind of what Jay Lethal was doing with the ROH World and TV titles where he's defending them, sometimes in the same night kind of thing, I do think the IC title is the one that he loses first. And I think it's Taiichi, to be honest, that
That
gets him
was my
there.
exact answer. That was
Yeah.
my
So,
exact answer.
so something tells me specifically that this is one thread that they're going to revisit in 2020 for sure between those two,
Oh,
because
yeah, for sure. How could they not?
they had a story this year throughout as well that culminated into their match of power struggle with Naito
Right.
literally kind of like showing semblances of like emotion and frustration and not being tranquil for the first time in a while. So
Yeah.
there's that portion to
Well, I mean,
consider.
he's done.
So
I
yeah.
mean, he's done that with Jay too. So you know,
Yeah,
he kind of.
definitely. Yeah, it eventually led into more of that with Jay White now. But yeah, with Taiichi specifically, he started showing a whole lot of that during that power struggle match. So there's that
You know,
trend to consider.
it is amazing how many people don't seem to realize that the whole Tranquilo thing is really kind of a. It's
A
kind of a.
nice little mask.
Well, no, it's a joke because, yeah, Naito is not really Tranquilo if you look down to it. You know, he acts like it, but I mean, you can get his goat. I mean, and let's face it, one of the guys who started the Tranquilo thing, definitely not Tranquilo. If you're
No,
we're talking
absolutely
Rush,
not. It's like
so.
both Rush and some like the reason they started that is because they just weren't being treated as, top, not only as top guys within the company, but the crowds were treating them like complete a-holes, even though they hadn't specifically done anything
Yeah,
to deserve
they
that.
weren't. Yeah, they weren't Rudo. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, again, we've gone through this thesis before about why the Ingobernables are like unlike any other unit in professional wrestling, because you know the because the roots of them just are completely are unlike anything else. So anyway, Lee continues. It's the it's kind of the standard ones, but who wins G1? Who wins G1 30 in 2020?
You know what? I'm gonna go on a limb with this one, and I'm gonna say this is the year that Jay White does it.
Ooh, okay.
I think this is the I think going into 2021 with the Dome being on a Monday and maybe a prediction that who knows, maybe business might not be as moving because the show isn't on a weekend like in years past. That maybe get a goes. Let's take our shot with Jay and see what he's made of in a Dome main event. He is one of our guys after all. We've raised him in this dojo. We've given him all of these different tools throughout the years. The one thing they haven't given him yet is the G1 itself. He made the finals this year around. I do think he's a prime candidate for winning G1 30 next year coming up.
My answer, this is a very gross assumption, of course, that it's going to be Naito being the champion, after January 5th, and having a good decent run with the IWGP heavyweight
Have
title.
you?
This is a very gross assumption, and I famously made this prediction before. Way back when on the show, like way back when, and it, of course, did not come to pass. My prediction of who, knowing what we know now, which is fuck all, who wins G1? Who wins G1 30? I think it's Kazuchika Okada, and
I could see it.
I think that the main event will finally be champion Naito versus challenger Okada.
I could see that as something that they do as a trend of exploring Okada being the challenger going into a Dome against Naito being the champion, the roles finally being reversed between the two.
Yeah,
So,
I think maybe that's we finally get that. I think it finally happens. Because
Yeah.
they failed to do it in years past, but now it seems like, knowing what we know now, which is, of course, is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's that's that, I think.
Yeah, it's some interesting circumstances. I am gonna say don't on the back of this that if they do end up if it ends up being my prediction of Jay White winning the G1, I do think it is ends up being a domain event of Jay White versus Tetsuya Naito in this case.
Okay. No, I guess we'll find out if that would be a draw, or if it even happens. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where they could play with the possibility on the Monday Dome show and see what happens. Because, again, the biggest thing to keep in mind as to why they're doing two nights this year around is because next year for 2021, January 4th does fall on a Monday.
Yeah,
So,
because of the leap year. So.
So that is one key aspect to consider as to why this is the year in which they decided to go out with two dome shows to take advantage of the weekend portion,
Yeah.
and that we won't see another Friday, Saturday, or Sunday dome show for another 5 years or so going forward here. So,
Yeah. So that was it for our questions from the public. Yeah, so Jesus, 4 years of doing this show.
we've been at this for a while,
It is.
definitely.
I mean, and again, I mean, we say it's only been episode, 60, because we don't do this as frequently as some, but sometimes we deliver more, than more content than perhaps needed sometimes. I do just want to take this time to thank the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network for still allowing us to be on the network. Especially this last year, it seems like we've had a lot more interactions with our fellow podcasters on the network. Like, we've become, we're getting pretty close to Dave and Lee of Days of Thunder. And I've had, I have a lot of conversations sometimes with Tom Batista of Military Industrial Suplex, Peter Winson of Greetings from Allentown, and Kelly, Johnny, and Pete of the Worldcast, which is now on a hiatus for a couple of months. It's been real good. I'm glad we've been able to, produce more content via Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and just
since we
in.
don't always since the format of New Japan doesn't really lend itself to a weekly podcast.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, where for us in particular, throughout 4 years of doing this, all of the different things that we have seen and done for the process, all of the kind of miles traveled between us two, our other co-hosts with
Yeah.
Lawrence O'Brien, Steve Cash, with friends of the show and Dion Wells, Bunchy Bunches, Jana, as well, just with the amount of shows that we've all seen together. Again, I think we all can be in agreement in saying that the G1 special shows in Long Beach are still like some of the fondest memories we've had, and that's thanks to this show in
Oh
general,
yeah.
just bringing us all together to do it.
Yeah,
So it's,
all hail the motherfucking taco truck.
yeah,
But
and we still wonder if it's
yeah.
there to this day.
I'm also glad that in 2019 we didn't end up falling on our faces as we did with people associated with this show as we have in years past, where
Yeah, we unfortunately kind of
one turned out to
showed
be a
our.
real one turned out to be a real scumbag. Well, actually they both turned out to be real scumbags.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it was one of the situations where at times we kind of did unfortunately show our whole asses onto the platforms that we're in, but thankfully this year we've managed to stray really far away from all that stuff and just
Yeah, so.
focus on, the wrestling portion of things, the podcasting, and just all that good stuff.
So that alone gives us, and of course, shout out. I mean, we've had some veritable legends of internet wrestling folk on this show. Cubs fan, of course, frequent guest. I still wish I could find some way we could reasonably bring Brett,
Yeah,
Bahu back.
which that was a phenomenal episode that we did for Strong Style History as well too, and I mean for our time too, we've guested in different podcasts as well, the SOS Wrestle Talk, which we're big fans of and we're close friends with a lot of the folks that are there, Captain Jack's Armbar Emporium, which I've been in a couple of times for G1 this year,
Yeah,
for another
hopefully,
time for this one, so.
yeah, we may actually be guessing on something soon, but we can't really talk about that just yet.
Yeah, it's a project that's been in the works here for a couple of weeks, and we're looking forward to eventually showing that out once we're
Yeah.
hopefully by before the end of the year, we should be able to show the fruits of our labor on that one.
Do we have any New Year's resolutions for this show?
I think just continuing to do the best as best as we can with it and trying not to lose our entire shit when Ring of Honor shows its whole ass again sometime in 2020, because you know that's coming.
I think I'm gonna add it as a New Year's resolution. I want to get back to Strong Style History in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
I
that's
want
fair.
to. I mean, it's been too long. It's what got us onto this network to begin with, and I think it's only fair that we should have continued that. But the people who really were the drivers of that show, chose to go in different directions, which is fine. But
Yeah.
Man.
It's one of the situations where it things in life, they get in the way of this stuff. So we'll try to figure something out to come up with good topics for 2020 for Strong Style History. And I mean, if you have any suggestions for us that you would like us to see,
I mean,
to
we
like see research and such,
by all rights, we
get at
really
us.
should have done one on Jushin Liger. By
Yeah.
all rights, but we obviously didn't have time, and we never did. But you know what? I also kind of like the idea of Strong Style History tackling not the obvious. It's like, I will never do the UWFI feud because it's been done to death, and in fact, on this network, it's been done. I mean, right around the time we started Strong Style History, some other, the Pro Pourri podcast, who's not really part of the network anymore, but they did like a
Yeah.
three-part episode on the UWFI feud. It's like, I okay, we don't need to do that one.
Yeah, it's one of the
So
situations where it
hence
is a
why
very popular thing.
hence why we did the Island Death matches, because nobody wants to talk about that shit.
Yeah, for sure. It has become a situation too where tackling certain topics, because I mean, the Enochism portion of things has definitely been tackled by quite a few people at this point too, with their different takes on it.
Well,
So we'll be looking.
including
Yeah,
us.
yeah, we definitely have. So it's something that come 2020, we'll be looking to some more topics to go into, and hopefully coming back with Strong Style History for sure. I do think that's a achievable goal for us come 2020, and we'll look towards doing some of that. Trying to think what else could be.
Well, and plus, because of the move, I mean, before I was doing, you know, this is how the sausages were made. I mean, I was recording podcasts in either in my kitchen or in my bedroom, depending on, you know, when and where people were. We couldn't really do it on weeknights because, you know, other people are here now. I actually have, like, an area I can go to now.
Mm-hmm.
To do this. I mean, this is how I'm able to do Boom Goes the Dynamite every Wednesday night.
Yeah, because otherwise it'd be way trickier of a situation.
Yeah, so I mean, now I have, like, I'm not gonna call it a studio, but I have, like, an area where I can go and record and not bother anybody.
Yeah.
Well, too badly anyway. Because, you know, my voice carries. I know this, so
mm-hmm, for sure.
But
goodness.
My 2020 resolution as we head into year 5 of this show is I do want to bring back Strong Style History and do some more stuff with that, especially since there is one topic I have been, you know, dying for years to do in some format, which I'm not going to mention yet, because I want to keep that one close to my chest. But anyone who knows me and actually knows me knows what this topic is, including you, Chris.
Yeah, so it's one of those situations where we've just been waiting for timing, circumstances, everything in between to make it happen. So hopefully in 2020, we will do just that.
Yeah, so do you have any other messages you want to say to people?
Just in general, thank you for being with us for a four-year anniversary's worth of shows. Again, just, you could be listening to just about everything else and you chose us. So, thank you. Because podcasts are a very popular thing in this modern day and age. And
we're fully cognizant of the fact that we're not exactly the most popular show on, like, we don't get the highest hits. We understand that even still we're a niche, even on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast network.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the fact is they still give us this forum. I mean, Kelly plugs us all the time on, and Peter Winston does too, you know?
Yeah, so we're appreciative of it, and
And David Lee, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And again, it's just one of the situations where I hope we can continue to do more, get back to doing history episodes and branch out a little bit more by guesting in certain spots, just to continue pushing and promoting the podcast as much as we can. And hopefully down the line too, like, bring a couple more guests in from different places as well, and even try to do something like kind of how we did the ever famed Super Junior episode, Super J Cup episode that one time with so many people that kind of led us into meeting a lot of our current friends that we have on this platform and stuff. So,
oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, so doing something like that somewhere down the line with a different show would be a ton of fun to do as well.
Yeah,
so.
It would be. So, but boy, we've been talking for what, 3 hours now? I think I've hit.
It feels like it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I think we're. So anyway, thank you for listening to this show for the last 4 years and for the last 3 hours, too, for that matter. Hope you all have a happy holiday, whatever it is you celebrate, and I hope you all have a happy new year. We do recognize, of course, that this is a difficult time for some people. You know, you can always hit us up. When we do, we'll give our addresses again when we do the plugs. But you know, you can always talk to us. You know, we're here to listen to you too. So, if this is a tough time of year, and we're gonna head into Wrestle Kingdom 14 two nights worth, you know, right at the beginning of the year, and hopefully we'll have some wonderful things to discuss when we return for episode 61. And we'll probably have Cubs fan again, because it'll be Fantastic-a-Mania time.
Indeed. And again, as per usual, this is also the time of the year where Hannibal Buress' watch, well, once again begins, whether he shows up at the Tokyo Dome or not, though who knows at
Wait,
this
wait, wait, wait,
point?
wait, wait. Say that again?
Hannibal Buress.
Oh, Hannibal Buress. Yes. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah. My
Right,
bad.
from that 1 year, and then just every year, just somebody hits him up on Twitter going, "Are you at the Tokyo Dome this year or not?
Yeah. I
We
thought you
need
said
answers."
something about Hanna-Barbera. I was like, what the hell does old cartoons have to do with New
Yeah,
Japan? But
no, not quite.
no, not that.
Yeah,
That ain't it, Chief.
no, not quite. Just the memes of whether Hannibal Buress can be found at the Tokyo Dome or not just need to be continued for another year or so at the very least.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like asking yourself, hey, is Phil Baroni still at the inside of the White Eagle Hall after WrestleMania weekend? Like, is he still within the premises?
Oh,
Because,
goodness. Oh,
yeah.
goodness. All right. All right, we're wrapping this shit up. Chris.
Yeah, so Twitter and Instagram, just like Inside A, you can find me at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. Yeah, that's as simple of a plug as I have at the moment.
You could find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. The blog is still at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. And once again, I'm just gonna plug my other show, Busting Balls, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. Once again, thanks everybody for listening to us today and through the last 4 years, and we'll have more. We'll be back with episode 61 coming up after Wrestle Kingdom, before Fantasticomania. So, although it may be kind of close because of Fantasticomania being like right at the end. Actually, yeah, we may be cut this kind of close.
Yeah,
This may
seems about right.
have to be a weekday taping. So, but in
I
any
mean,
event.
we gotta do, we gotta do, what we gotta do, man.
Yeah, we
It is what
do.
it
Oh, and
is.
plus with New Year Dash being on a month, yeah, we may be cutting this close. So, in any event, on behalf of Chris Damasano, I am Jeffrey Wessel, and we will see you in the new year. So, thanks once again.